If I ask any of you to raise your hand if you want to have a family that is kind, compassionate, serving, and loving, you'd all raise your hands. But I might also ask you if you have the time to research how to do that. And most of our hands would probably not be up because we don't have the time to do that. So this year, we are starting something different. We've had some families come to us and say, would you coach us? Would you help us? Would you journey with us to teach our families how to love, how to serve? And quite honestly, we're just doing that with you. So we're so pumped to introduce our Family Coaching Network. It starts in January. You can go to www.bestrongstory.com to get all the information. But basically, we're just going to be coaching every month, doing some stuff that we're already doing with our family. January, we're talking about family mission. We're going to be teaching on that, but we're also going to give you the tools to do that with your family. And so make sure you go to www.bestrongstory.com to find out more. 'Cause all
I need is... Hi, I'm Christy Hayes and co-founder of Be Strong Story, a family mission and company founded because of a little lunchbox note my husband wrote my son that said,
be strong, protect the weak, love everyone.
That's right. We believe those three lines can change our world if we live them out. Each week, we'll be sharing an inspiring and real story of others who are displaying this message of love in big and small ways in their community. Because every way matters. We hope each story will inspire you to make this message your own. Let's go love the world, you guys.
Today, I had the great opportunity to interview Steve Cockrum. Steve is just this incredible person who teaches us how to figure out who we are, gives us the tools and the opportunities. So many of us don't even know who we are. We don't know what we're passionate about anymore. Maybe we've lost ourselves in mothering or in a different job, and we're like, what exactly are we? We talk about the things that have held us back, whether it be someone putting us in a certain box or the words that they've said who we are, but that's not exactly who we are. And we kind of dive into these personality traits and how to love others, because the only way that we really can know to love others well is to know them well, to know why they do what they do, how they like to experience love. So many times we're giving love a certain way, but that's not the way that they actually want or need to receive it. Steve is this incredible international speaker. He's an author. He's a consultant to top-level executives and leaders around the world. He's co-founder of Giant Worldwide, which is a global leadership consultancy, and he's co-authored 5 books. And the one we talk about today is the 5 voices and how we have these tools that we can use to understand ourselves, but to also understand others and even our family. We talked a lot about understanding our kids and how we can love and support them well, but also how we can challenge them. And so I think you're just going to love it no matter what. He has some brilliant advice, but he's also from England. And so he has this beautiful accent as well. And so who doesn't want to listen to an English accent for the next 30 minutes? So welcome Steve Cockrum to the show. Hey, Steve, thanks so much for being here on our Be Love podcast, where we just share stories of those who are loving well in hopes to inspire us to do the same thing. One of the things that I have loved about your writing and speaking and just getting to know you a little more is that you dig deep into teaching others how to know themselves and know others so we can communicate well and so we can love others well. Because if we don't know ourselves and if we don't know the personalities of others, it's very, very difficult to do. And so I'm so excited for you to teach us today. Tell us a little bit more about you, where you are. I'm so excited for your accent. I would like one of those accents. So tell us a little bit more about you, who you are, what you do, all those things.
Okay, well, Christy, thank you for having me. I love your introductions. You've actually obviously done some work beforehand. I'm Steve Cockrum. I'm married to Helen. We've been married for 27 years. We have 3 girls. Izzy's 19, Megan, who's 15, Charlie, who's 8 and a half, who's a very unexpected blessing in our old age. And she was born in America, so she's a little blue passport. And we have a puppy called Jemima, who actually may not be a puppy now. She was 1 on Saturday. So I am surrounded by women. The house I live in is full of women and all the friends they have. And I constantly try and bring inspirational women who are changing the world into our home to inspire the girls to be the best they can be. So I'll be 50 in February. It's hard to believe. I was an athlete. Body's decayed many years ago. I still play golf regularly. I still play tennis. I love the movies. It's one of my favorite sort of date nights. We went to Downton Abbey last night. And I live just outside of London. So for those, for most Americans, knowing London is far enough away. But for those who really know, sort of west, about 20 miles, close to Heathrow and about 45 minutes from Oxford. So there you go, Christy. How does that start?
I love that. Let's talk about London for a second. So I went to London this year for the first time. I just pretended I was one of you guys. And my husband, I said, I think I can pick up this accent in like a week. I feel like maybe I have an accent a little bit. And he was like, Christy Hayes, he goes, if you come home with any type of accent, he goes, no. He's like, that is not a thing. I said, it is a thing. I said, I feel like I've been immersed in the culture and I just loved it. Tell me your favorite thing about living in London.
I love the theaters. So I love musical theater, which may sound slightly less masculine than my sporting endeavor. But honestly, I go all the time. So if we have guests come over from the States and stay with us, I always ask them, have you been to Les Miserables? If they haven't, I always take them to that one because it's just the most profound experience at every level. So I love the theater. I love the sport. And just, I think, the energy that comes from being in a global city. And I know we fight every now and again with sort of, you know, Shanghai or with New York. But deep down, I think there's a reason why London was built on the Greenwich Meridian and basically the whole of time orients around London. So there we go.
I loved the people there. And so when I went there, I'm very bubbly, as you can tell, and just kind of, hi, everyone. You know, I love to talk to people. And my husband's like, hey, babe, he said, so those in London are maybe a little more cynical, a little less bubbly. And so I did not agree with that at all. I thought your taxi drivers or cab driver, whatever you call them, they are the best. They are so funny. Sarcasm is my favorite language. That's like my love language. And you guys are so sarcastic. And so I loved everything about it. So I'm a little bit jealous.
The only time you get into trouble, Christy, is if you go on the morning commuter trains into London. So I was on the 6:52 this morning for a breakfast meeting, and the whole carriage, in terms of demographics, there was one woman on the 6:52, and no one said a word. Literally everyone is resigned to their fate that they're heading into London for yet another day. As you move towards 7, 8 o'clock onwards, people will talk to you, but there's almost this attritional process, I think, in a city where there are so many people. People love their peace and quiet. So when I love Americans because of course you're going to talk to everybody. Why wouldn't you?
It's why part wouldn't of you. We?
And in the end, most Brits kind of give you the benefit of the doubt the first time. So they'll love you. And I think the thing is Brits are, you know, we pretend to be cynical a little bit and we are a little bit more jaded. But, you know, when we meet the optimism and the positivity of America, something lovely happens in us and we kind of go, you know, I'm not sure I could do that every day, but just a little dose of Christy Hayes, I think we're good to go.
I love it. I love it. Well, I was so just happy to have scones every day that I wanted to hug the people that gave me the scones every day. I think they didn't know what to do with me because I just thanked them over and over and over again for these wonderful things that I ate every day. So Steve, tell us a little bit about what you do and just the whole, I know you're with Giant Worldwide and we've interviewed Jeremy Kubitschek yes. on our podcast before. And the funny thing is I do a lot of research before and I usually like read a lot what I didn't do with Jeremy is I did not listen to how his name was pronounced. So the whole time that I'm talking to him on here, I'm like, thank you, Jeremy Kubitschek. Thank you so much. After the whole podcast, I realize I've been saying his name the whole time wrong. So I had to apologize, redo an excerpt. So I won't do that with you, I promise. But yeah, tell us what you do with Jeremy and just tell us kind of what you love to do.
So I can give you two answers. The one I used to have as a classic pioneer was when someone says, what do you do? I say, I change people's lives forever, which is a great, very provocative statement that I remember one lady that I met in the VIP booth at the baseball in Atlanta. And she said, well, that sounds very arrogant. And I said, well, it's only arrogant if it's not true, which I think apparently is arrogant still. So that's what I do. What does Giant do? I think what we've tried to do is we've tried to retool leaders for the new world. So our basic assumption is this, is roughly every 250 years in Western history, there is a technological breakthrough which changes the world of work for everybody. And when the world of work changes, there is a huge disorientation for everybody, whether you're at home, whether you're in an office, whether you're in a government, whatever sector you're in. And the, when the world of work changes, the skills of leadership have to change as well. And some of you will think, awesome, I'm in the middle of, you know, a real huge transition that people will write about as we move from late industrial to the digital world. Others of you, again, that's just typical, Steve, of all the times for me to be born when I could just have done with things staying steady and still. So I would say that what we're doing is we're retooling leaders for the world that's coming, which is very different. And we've, if we've cracked anything, Christy, we've tried really hard to say, how can we scale healthy leadership using a mixture of what we call high tech and high touch? So in some ways, the digital world is very threatening. It's scary to a lot of people, but there is incredible opportunity because the world is now connected in a way it wasn't before. So having, we believe, spent 5 years developing tools and lenses to help people live well, love well, connect well, all those things you talked to before, we've now been exploring in the last 18 months, how do we harness the power of technology and platform so that in reality we can make available to people the very best of what we have, but not have to charge them $5,000, $10,000 a day or a keynote. So fundamentally, platforms are changing everything because everyone who's listening can have access to us live, all of our content for, you know, even an individual user is only $8.99 a month. So if you imagine for a company with 50,000 employees in five continents, fundamentally, how do you get to what we call the subculture leaders, the ones which really drive the employee experience? And most people have never done that. So that's a plug from a business point of view. But for your audience, I would say, partly for me, how do we help people know who they are so they actually have a confidence of leading themselves and navigating the new world? Because if you don't know how to lead yourself, it's very hard for you to have the confidence to lead other people, whether that's spouses, whether that's children, whether that's those you work with or colleagues. Self-awareness has become one of the most fundamental skill sets of the new world. And so therefore, for many of your sort of predominantly female listeners, this is great news because IQ, it was the predominant skill set and currency of influence in the late industrial world. In the new world, EQ, emotional intelligence, relational connectivity, is actually more valuable than ever before because effectively AI and things like Google, Siri, Wikipedia will always be more intellectually intelligent at memorizing information and processing data. But the ability to understand people, connect with people, is, I believe, a sweet spot for many of your listeners today. So they should feel quite confident that their skill set is very, very valuable in the new world, even if, of course, they doubt the value of their own skills, which so many of my fairer sex friends do.
So tell me, you talk about healthy leadership and we talk about a lot of people on here might be like, well, I'm not a leader of a company or I don't own this, but you lead, everybody leads somebody no matter what. And yeah. I would say one of the things that I'm learning just even at 40 is getting to know who I am and this self-awareness. And I even think with just the business side, being vulnerable, showing people who you really are, being completely content in who you are gives permission for people to be themselves. So tell us a little bit, dig deep. And if I am sitting here listening and I'm thinking I'm in a different season of life, maybe I was in business before and then I had kids and then I was home and now I'm back because my kids are, and I'm trying to figure out what in the world is my purpose. I have so many women who knew their purpose before, then they had kids and that was their purpose. And then now they're kind of in a different thing. Help us figure out what are some tools and tips that we can do to start knowing who we are, number one, and number two, how to be confident in who we are.
Gosh, how long have you got, Christy? So I think that the if you think of when you look at someone's behavior, you are looking at a complex mix of nature, nurture, and choice. So whenever you take an assessment, it's always more limited than the person who wrote it would like you to believe, even including mine. Because what an assessment does is it measures in the moment what do you think you ought and should be doing. So oughts and shoulds are like layers that get put on top of people. What we're looking for is to go, do you know your nature? So your nature is your DNA, your personality, your wiring. In many ways, you're born with that. It's a DNA piece of you. Nurture is the external influences which shape you. So your upbringing, your gender, parents, schools, jobs, successes, failures, faith, all those things are external nurture influences which shape at a conscious and an unconscious level why we behave the way we do. And we all make choices. And, you know, by my stage of life, I've made quite a few good ones and some I wish I could have again and vice versa. So therefore, one of the things I say that is it's so easy. I think being an American woman is the hardest role in the world to play, particularly if you live in the South. But that's another story if you want to hear more. But the layering that happens of ought and should through expectations of family, of children, of spouses, of responsibilities. And so many women who I talk with and support and help almost need to have a bit of a detox and go, I'm going to peel off all the layers where other people have told me this is what I ought and should be. And I probably need to get back to that sense of going, who am I at the core of my nature? The reason that's important is if you don't understand who you are. Now, again, I'll give you some tools that we've written and created to do that. If you don't know nature, it's really hard to know what am I passionate about and what do I really want to live into and do? Because we wrote another tool called the 70-30 principle, which, you know, I call Cochrane's Law. Pareto has one. Why can't I? If you can spend 70% of your time doing what you are by nature, naturally made for and gifted to do, you will always have the energy to do the 30%, which is always alert behavior, at best conscious competence, and is usually always draining. So most people, a lot of the people you just described, are probably upside down in their 70-30. They've almost forgotten, what do they do at their best? What brings them life? What is energizing? What's life-giving? What can be unconscious competence? Because you never survive with a 50-50 or less for more than a year without really starting to go through the motions. So when you start feeling, I'm on a treadmill, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm just doing a job, or I'm just doing this, and who am I? Or we have what I call a justice syndrome. I'm just a mum, I'm just a in the home, I'm just a.
Right.
It's almost like sometimes you have to say, you have to go back to first principles and go, but who am I really? So we wrote Five Voices. I'm a ninja in personality. I spent about 17 years studying Myers-Briggs and FIRE-OB and various other Jungian psychologies to help people understand who they are by nature. But my daughter said to me, Daddy, it's too complicated for me. And you said in the new world, everything has to be available to educated 13-year-olds so they can understand it, you teach their friends. I love the fact I'm an ENFP. I love the fact you grow me and develop me using that. I understand it, I use it, but I can't teach it to my friends. So Five Voices was Personality Simplified that Jeremy and I wrote together. And if you go to fivevoices.com, there is a free assessment that will give you a snapshot into what your, I'm not guaranteeing nature, but it will give you an exploration of going, does that sound like me? And if you really want to go, and this is a free link for a month, so I'm not asking, if you go to giant.tv/BB and create an account, if you take the assessment for Five Voices on the platform, there is actually a 16-session coaching video for each of the 16 personality types, which will give you a chance to, what I say, try on a coat, not a straitjacket, because a lot of people feel personality and things put them in a box. So I'm going, if try it on and over a period of a few weeks, see how it feels. Because I promise you, when you get to a place where you go, that is me, I may have forgotten it. It may have got layered under all kinds of oughts and shoulds. But you know, that is me at my best. Then you can begin moving forward, Chrissy, to go, in light of that, what would it look like for me to live into a 70-30 reality? And how do I get my spouse? How do I get those around me to cheer for me? And almost to be a liberator for me and help create the environment where I get to be that best. You'll know when you've got there or not, because all of a sudden it doesn't feel like work. It feels like I might be tired,
right,
but I'm doing it out of the overflow of something that I was made for. And my experience is a lot of the time in midlife for people, particularly if they've had family and particularly if they've given up careers, whatever it is, it's like, who am I? Mm-hmm. So that sounds like a terrible plug, but in all honesty, that is the best resource that we have for you, because actually not only can you take the assessment, but you can try it on and you can listen to a whole host of, in many ways, personal development videos that are, you know, as I said, there's a free month. So if you're a millennial listening, that gives you enough time to video my videos so you never have to pay.
I like what you said about the should and here's who you should be, here's who you ought to be. I just had a conversation with a friend the other day, and I feel like there's two different types of people. You either love these personality tests, like the Enneagram and all those, you know, or you hate them. And so I love them. I want to do all of them. I want to know who I am. And I pretty much know who I am. I'm an Enneagram 8, I think. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be, I want to be a 3. And, you know, like you're constantly trying to move those around. And it's interesting. I had a conversation with my friend the other day and she said, all these people are taking these tests and saying who they are. And she goes, I just don't know who I am. And she goes, and then people say, no, this is who you are. You're a 2. You're a 1. You're a this, you're that. And so she's like, well, then I think, okay, that's who I am. Maybe that's who everyone thinks I should be. And so that's what I should live into because I don't want to disappoint anyone. So it's all these layers that go on to that of finding who you are. I love that part where you just said you kind of need to detox from what everyone else says about you and just get to the basics of what brings you life. And
I mean, I think what I said, Christy, is the therapy is only as good as the therapist. So therefore, for me, one of the worst things about any personality is when someone says, well, this is who you are then, because that is a level of arrogance that is never true. Nobody actually without a significant amount of work can really know someone's nature.
Yeah.
So if someone's telling you this is who you are and it doesn't fit, then actually that I would say they're not offering you a coat to try on. They're offering you a box to put you in. Mm-hmm. So if it feels like you're being put in a box, run away. If you have an expert in the Enneagram, Myers-Briggs, whatever it might be, they will be able to help you as an individual level. What we found though was those tools only worked when you had the expert present. So actually it was amazing when the Jedi is in the room, but actually 3 months later, when you're trying to work out, how do I use this in my everyday? Mm-hmm. How do I use this at home? How does it become vocabulary and language that everyone can use? That's what we found, that basically we said the new world is so busy and overwhelmed with information. If it can't be visual, interactive with immediate application, it won't last. And if it's any more complicated that an educated 13-year-old can understand it, you teach their friends, it won't work. So I believe what we created is simple enough that you can use every day, but it's not simplistic. There's a huge difference. So if you've been abused by inventories and other things, I can only apologize. All I'll tell you is that basically we have created something in 5 Voices that big corporates are using, the US government, the US military are using, and all kinds of families and people who write every day going, what you've created has given us a vocabulary and language that I can use at home, and I don't need a guru to translate it for me. So if you give it one more chance, if you're listening to this and go, you know, I would say that because I created it, but I honestly believe it's actually got the capacity to be a coat for you to try on, not a box for you to have to be put into. And I think that's the reason why people often are quite resistant to that. But it's very hard, Christy, to get to a place of peace, self-awareness, and knowing this is who I am. I mean, I was with a very large church in San Antonio 2 weeks ago. Like, you know, for a Brit to go to a church of 25,000 members is like, what? That's like a small city where we are. And that's what I'm saying, is to do it in an environment where people are able to celebrate, oh my goodness, that's what you bring at your best. Mm-hmm. And to understand that part of the responsibility is to those around you. It's not just you're going to be able to do it for yourself. So if you're listening to this thinking, oh my goodness, yeah, even if I get liberated, even if I feel that, how do I explain it to my spouse or my family or those I'm responsible mm-hmm. for? That's often even more frustrating if you can't do that. So there you go. 5 Voices is what we wrote to help you deal with exactly that. And we created basically a personalized personal development coaching journey so every single person can find a way How do I deal with stress? What lies do I believe about myself? How do I undermine my influence every day? All of those are simple titles of the video series that people have found helpful. So giant.tv/BB, that will get you a free month on the platform. So there you go.
I am so pumped for today's sponsor. They are Recreate Solutions, and you are never going to believe the deal that they are giving three of our listeners. So what's Recreate Solutions? Basically, they are a consultation coaching company, but they're not just that. They really are a transformation company. They help leaders and businesses going from being busy to productive. They help you get unstuck. They help you get to the next level of where you want to be. You don't know how many emails I get all the time from moms who have been home with their kids, and then their kids are in school and they think, wait, what am I supposed to do? What was my purpose? What was my passion? Help me find the things that I'm good at. Help me find the things I loved. And that is what Jeremy and his team are here for, to help us find what we're gifted at, our talents, and how we can impact the world. So definitely go to recreate-solutions.com, go to contact us, contact Jeremy, let him know you heard us here on Be Love Podcast so that you can get all of the advice and the coaching that you need to impact your world. Let's say we figure out who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of that next step? So for us, it's teaching people to love who they are, because I really do. You always hear that and it sounds so cheesy. Like, you have to love yourself to love others well, and, you know, take care of yourself. And that doesn't mean like you have to go to the spa and take care of yourself. That literally means, for me, you know, rest is a big piece of my journey. And I would never have said I was a restful person before, because I'm a doer. I go. Until kind of my own story of learning that I'm satisfied in who I am versus like being satisfied my identity being in what I do or what others think I should do. And so I'm to that place where I'm satisfied in who I am and I know what my passion is. And that's not all people know that. But I think it's so important that one of the things that we are doing is figuring out ourselves so that we can love ourselves. But in turn, for me, I want to know who I am so that I can use my gifts, my passions to be about others. So it's not just about me going, oh, yay, I figured out myself and now I'm going to do all these really awesome, selfish things. How can we then go, okay, we know this about ourselves. We know these are our giftings. How then can we turn and say, okay, this is how we're going to be about others?
So I think that's the reason why vocabulary and language, which covers everyone, can actually then cause you to learn how to celebrate the people that are different to you. So that it's easy at times to get on with people that are like us. We may not have a code of voices or gears or whatever it might be, but it's like we certainly connect with people much easier who are like us. So most people assume everyone's kind of like us, really. So we'll do for others what we'd most want done for us, which will get it wrong about 80% of the time. And I think it's that ability. You know, people go, oh, Steve, I'm not an expert on personality. I go, well, you know, if you sat down, you know, who are the people, what's the relationships you'd most love to see breakthrough in, where you feel they love you and you can love them? If you ask the question, go out on a date night with your spouse and go, hey, if I was going to love you well, what would that look like from your perspective? Because the moment you start with the curiosity of going, I probably have no idea. I mean, Helen and I've been happily married for 27 years. Helen for on and off the last 12. Because I had no idea what it was like to be on the other side of me. I had a more dominant personality, so therefore I tended to set the agenda. Looking back, I think, gosh, it took a while for me to understand what did loving Helen mean, when actually I had to go to a world which is almost completely alien to me. I mean, I had to, so therefore, the only way I was going to find that, that's really where the exploration of personality came from.
Because you were curious. I'm going to interrupt you right here. Because you were curious and you asked. So I would say.
I felt guilty, probably is the first premise.
So I would say that for most spouses, We think we're doing a certain thing, like doing it well, because, like, for instance, the love languages. I like to be loved a certain way. Words of affirmation, affection are my things. So then I love Grant that way. Well, he could care less about those things. He loves acts of service. And, like, he doesn't even care if I say, "You're so awesome." He's like, "Yeah, great. Thanks so much." But that doesn't show him love. And so what was the first step that you did? I mean, that was 12 years ago is what you're saying, that you finally figured out. Did she say something, or did you finally say, okay, ask that curious question of how actually do you want to be loved?
I think, I mean, it was actually 17 years ago, just to be, for me, that was my maths out. And the reality was I studied something called Myers-Briggs and 4IB. In fact, somebody paid me to go do it. I think I had a compassion for Helen. And it actually was so eye-opening to me first. And then I began to realize that Helen was wired completely differently. So whichever tool you use, find a way that allows you to understand and celebrate what the other brings. Now, from that, that's the beginning. Because we always say that tendencies don't change. So I have hardwired tendencies in my personality, which means if I'm accidental as a husband, the old tendencies become my actions. And they often have negative consequences that shape my reality. So, but if I'm self-aware, I have the ability to choose my action. So I would say the journey, the difference between being an average husband and a great husband is me being conscious enough to go, I know what my tendency is, but I'm going to choose a different action because I know for Helen, that actually is what she needs right now. So I'm very logical, rational, analytical. I love to solve complex problems. People pay me money. I've had to learn. We even develop things, something called the communication code, because Helen would sometimes come home and we'd be sat down and she'd like, "See, I'm just struggling so much." And I'm going like, "Well, okay, tell me a bit about what's going on." And she'd give me three things that she was struggling with. I'm thinking, well, this is awesome. You know, this is what I do for a living. I'm going to get the whiteboard. This is going to be a great date night. Here's the three issues. I've already started working out, you know, some ways we could do this thing. And I look around and Helen's crying. And she goes,
"How'd that work out for you?"
You go, "You do not understand me." And I'm going like, "You're right. I don't understand you. You're presenting a problem and I'm trying my best to help solve that problem. And you're saying I'm missing you completely." Well, again, what I learned now is, and this was giving clues, Helen was really saying, what I'm about to say bears no resemblance to what's really going on in me. I just want to know, are you prepared to be present with me, not try and solve me, just love me and be present and waste some time with me rather than go off trying to work out how you're going to change the world? Well, part of me is going like, well, I wish you told me that because it would have been a lot easier. We get people to write what we call their liberation statements to go, if you were really going to create an environment where I got to be at my best, this is what I most want you to know about me. So that's another great date night exercise for anybody, or with your children. You'd be amazed how many mums are desperately trying to make their children into something they think a perfect child looks like when actually they're wired very differently. So the ability to be able to say, if you were going to give me the clues that you wish I knew, could you write me a paragraph or so which says, if you were going to actually love me well, or what we would call calibrate, support, and challenge, this is what I'd most love you to know about me. So the ability to ask, Christy, and the ability to create, if both parties want to make a breakthrough, then it's usually possible. If one party wants to make a breakthrough and the other one doesn't, there's no magic in our toolbox that gets over that. But fundamentally, we don't have because we don't usually ask.
Right.
It's jaw-dropping. Honestly, if you start loving someone and saying, if I'm your partner, I go, "Christy, I want to be the very best I can be to help you be the best you can be. But I'm going to need you to give me some clues and I'm going to need you to help me. I want to learn how to love you well. But actually, when I've tried to do it in the past, it hasn't always gone well. My intent is not enough. I need tools and I need support and I need some structure around what does loving Helen look like?" That's for me anyway. So we're a work in progress, but that's, I think, one of the most helpful. You have to schedule time for it. Mm-hmm. You have to get outside the home for it. You have to basically communicate your value, because I think for those of us who have spouses that have given up a huge amount of their career to run incredible homes, raise amazing children, care for the community, create. I mean, the people Helen cares for is amazing, but she doesn't, the culture doesn't tend to value that the same way it does someone who's written books, travels the world, speaks, and in theory earns a lot of money. I know her role is more sacrificial and far more valuable than mine can ever be. So I always say to Helen, Helen, you need to understand, we have one calling as a couple. We have different roles and responsibility in that. I don't differentiate what I'm doing with you here than what Helen's doing in there, which is probably making dinner for everyone and doing homework. I think I get the best deal out of it, but that's because I'm wired the way I am. So how do you make your other, your partner feel like they are a true partner in what you're doing? One calling together, different roles. And I think that's one of the things that we work really hard to do, because Helen will underestimate her contribution because I get the public plaudits for what I do.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And that's happened with Grant and I so much. And I think anyone listening who been married 1 year, been married 40 years, that's a question I think you, and I think you have to constantly ask it, right? So it's an intentional, we, Grant and I just celebrate our 17 year anniversary. And the guy at the table who was waiting on us said, what's your secret? And it's funny because I love time spent, and Grant's kind of like, he could do, you know, we could be at a party with 100 people and he's like, we've spent time together. I'm like, no, that does not count as time together. That does not count. That does not do double duty. And it's funny because when the waiter said, what is the thing that has kept you going for 17 years? And Grant said, time spent. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's so weird that he said that. And it was, it is true. He loves it. He doesn't want to have to be in charge of figuring out when we're going to do that. But if I can do that, then he's always on board to go. So for almost 17 years, we have had tried to have a weekly date. We have two kids, very busy schedules, and sometimes we don't even want to go. I'm like, I'm so tired, I don't even want to go out. But it is something that's so important. And I think that question, we had a counselor say to us, because Grant is very much like you, and I have a million ideas all the time. My brain never stops. And so I would come in and say, here's my new company, here's my new idea. And Grant would be like, okay, he's logistics. He's like, let's get it on the whiteboard. Da-da-da-da-da. You know, and in an hour and a half, I'd be on to the next thing. And he's like, would be frustrated. And then I would be frustrated. Like, why can't you just dream with me? Why do you have to write it all down? So a counselor told us, Christy, when you come in and you have this personality, you need to tell Grant, this is a like dining room table, like sort everything out conversation, or this is just like, we're just going to sit on the back porch with a glass of wine, and Grant, you're just actually going to listen to her. And she's just going to tell you how excited she is about all these new things that are in her mind and how she's going to do all these things. And then like, it's, she just wants you to listen. That's it. But I don't think the weird thing is, why don't we ask each other these things? It's so funny. We just assume, and then we do it. And then I think we get scared. What I've run into is my friends are like, it's been so long since we haven't communicated the way that we need. And now I'm actually kind of nervous to say what I need, because he hasn't done it in so long. He's going to be like, well, what the heck? Why haven't you told me this 26 years ago? You know? So I think it's a scary thing. So I love that you said those questions, and I'll put that in the show notes too. I think those are so huge. For our kids, you have older kids than I do. This is, I'm trying to figure out, I have a little girl who's exactly like me, and I have a son who is like my husband. And so Grant, Holden and I are like this. I mean, he's just so easy to be with. Carter May and I are so, she's so fun. I love being with her, but she's the one that I've got to figure out how to parent. How do we get to know our kids, and how do we parent them differently the way that they need?
Yes, great question. Again, I think that basically if you parent children well, between the ages of about 8 and 12, you see pure nature. So if you think about nature, nurture, choice. So the most important thing, but children need two things to grow up well. They need to know they're loved unconditionally. That doesn't mean that they're not disciplined, but it means that there's nothing they can do that will ever cause there to be anything other than unconditional love from parents. And the second is, it's okay to be you. We want you to learn how to be the person you were made to be, and we're going to do our bit to help you get there. I remember some child psychologist friends of mine in Phoenix gave me a word of advice. They said, Steve, you are such a, well, they used to say, charismatic character that everyone wants to come to your world, and your children will always think of you as a hero for a long time. They will come to your world anytime you invite them because it's just exciting for them. But could we challenge you to go? What would it look like for you to choose to try and access their world and understand the world through their eyes? So for me, it's one of those ones of going, how do I actually be intentional of asking, well, what does the world look like through their eyes? How do I help them be the person and do the things that they want to do, even if those hobbies are not what I wanted? So I think understanding that each child is different, once those two things are in play, round about that early age, they've not really, nurture has told them it's great to be them. They've not really had a chance to make any naughty choices, really. So therefore, you see nature in its rawest and purest form. And if you're familiar with a tool like the Voices, you watch and you see. And then what we say is, what does it mean to calibrate high support and high challenge for each? That's the goal. How do you calibrate those two things to help them grow to be the best they can possibly be? So Izzy, my first daughter, was an ENFP or a connected creative pioneer. They're always sickeningly talented. They're naturally good at pretty much everything, but they lack discipline and consistency over an extended period of time. So Izzy and I had a deal, which was Izzy's going to learn the piano. Of course, she's naturally good at it, but at the age of 6 or 7, Izzy did 10 years of playing the piano. And she learned what happens when you align natural talent with discipline, consistent investment of talent over a period of time. So for Izzy, that was one of the most loving things we could give her. She didn't always want to do it, but we knew that would be, once she'd done it with one skill set, she could repeat it again. Megan, our middle one, is a creative pioneer or INTP. Maggie is academically brilliant. So the thing with Megan is she doesn't need people. So we've had to work with Maggie at going, it's one thing to know you're right all the time. How do we learn for you to connect with people, to be interested before interesting, to learn how to do social environments well, to be able to share your ideas without confusing people? So if you think about it, each time we've known what nature is, we've been able then to calibrate our parenting to try and create an environment where we're able to work on their strengths and celebrate them, but also help them grow in the areas that they need to. So Charlotte, our little 8.5-year-old, is me in a skirt with blonde hair. It's terrifying. She's not got a compassionate bone in her body in terms of selflessness or care about the home. Helen, of course, is the most caring, loving, nurturing character you'll ever meet. He finds it incredibly hard that why on the earth would Charlie not want to help everybody? So learning how to encourage and grow, what's the appropriate challenge and what's the appropriate support so you don't crush the child, mm-hmm. I would say is the key. But without tools, it's difficult. But if you actually, you know, if you're committed, we have tools that are visual that the kids can play with. That's the answer. Okay. I want to learn how to be highly supportive to you if you're my daughter, Christy, but I want to challenge you as well so that you get to be the best you can possibly be. Talk to me about what that might look like for you. What does it mean if daddy is highly supportive for you? Well, daddy, you come and spend time with me. Or so you'll hear them talk about love languages without using the vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Or daddy, I love it when you help me dream ideas that are going to change the world. Or I love it, daddy, when you come with me and I'm caring for people and it really feels like you're with me caring with them. You know, so they give you clues if you ask them. And in some ways it can be almost like a project. Yeah. Once you have a lens to go, they may be very different from me. What does support and challenge look like for them so that actually in the 18 years I have with them, I get to shape them to be equipped to deal with the world that they're going to encounter. So forgive me, I feel like I'm preaching now, but this is something I'm passionate about.
Yeah, I think it's great.
I think, and most kids don't have it, Chrissy. That's the honest answer. One of the tragedies of the new world is very few kids grow up in a truly, truly loving home where, you know, that actually they have that simplicity. It's not negative about other things, but it really does make a difference. People always say, well, how do you get kids like yours? I go, well, it's 18 years plus of hard work.
Yeah.
I think it's the most sacrificial thing any of us do.
Yeah.
And particularly, you know, how you share the load of that. I have utter admiration for people who bring up children on their own. I don't know how they do it. I really don't.
It's incredible. What age were your girls when you started asking them that question of how can I be supportive of you, but also how can I help you get to where you want to be? What age was that?
By about seven.
Okay. And what was that conversation like for a seven-year-old? Because I have a seven-year-old.
So with Izzy, for example, I knew Izzy was a big sky dreamer. We used to love lying on the grass, looking at the clouds, and she could tell me what she could see. So I'm watching an intuitive. You watch creative patterns, is deeply empathetic to other people. And I'm, in some ways, it's not really at that age. It's almost the question of going, Izzy, do you know that I love you? Is I want you to be everything that God has made you to be, and I will do everything I can to make that possible. So in some ways, understanding the roles of fathers with daughters, you know, there's a huge, huge impact we have, and our words mean a great deal, mm-hmm. our words and our actions. So in some ways, I would say it's repetitive affirmation. I reckon I've done prayers every night with the girls since all the way through. I literally finish the same way. I say, I pray tonight that Izzy, Megan, Charlie, whatever it is, would just know how much their father loves them and how much their Heavenly Father and how much their dad is so proud of them and loves them so much. And if you ask them, they'll say, they've always known that. I mean, they might go, oh, Dad, occasionally. But I go, No, you're never not going to know, because I'm going to speak it over you, because I've done enough work with leaders in the future, where part of undoing that kind of nurture piece is the words spoken over them were negative. Mm-hmm. Or in the midst, there was, Christy, just remember, you're not the clever one. Or I don't think you're ever going to amount to much. Or, you know, you're pretty plain, or whatever it might be. You'd be amazed the power of words that actually get lodged away in the subconscious of children, and they become, from authority figures, a hugely, hugely significant narrative. So in mothers, fathers, friends, guardians, actually continue to speak words over your spouse, over your friends, over the people you work with. Words mean something, mm-hmm. and they're more powerful than we sometimes realize. So that's just my little parenting tips.
No, I think that's good, because we have a lot of parents listening, and I think words matter all across the board. I'm trying to do this thing where I call it, I'm writing a chapter, and it's Speak Your Mind. And one of the things that my goal is to, when I think something good about someone, it could be as simple as I see someone in the grocery store who has these crazy children and she's actually a patient mother, is to go up to her and say, I love how you're parenting. You're so patient. I mean, that would make my day forever. To know that I'm barely hanging on and someone else notices that I am parenting well. That's my biggest thing, is like, I feel like I do some different things well, but parenting is one of those things that I want to be really great at, but I have to work really hard at it. It's not just something that comes supernatural to me. So I would love for someone to say, wow, I saw you do that. Or whether it be a friend that you see, and, you know, a lot of times we'll talk behind their back in a good way. You know, I'll say to another friend, like, oh, such and such is so awesome. But we don't tell that person that. And now I'm just starting to tell that person. If I think it, I say it. And I speak my mind to every single person that I think something good about, I tell them, whether it be as stupid as, you know, they have a great outfit on, or whether they have, you know, just an incredible character trait. Just those words that really, really, really matter.
I think I couldn't agree more. And I think you have a gift of encouragement. So therefore, what for you is natural, for some is more difficult. But I think that the ability to be a life giver to people. So I always joke over here and say, 99% of people would rather be led than lead. So if you actually position yourself as somebody who is prepared to lead and to define the culture in any environment, most people will defer to you. So we do things. We use dinner tables a lot in Giant, and we have everything from call-up dinners to celebration dinners to future dinners to salute dinners. And we find, even in very, very, you know, everything from families to big corporate boardrooms, you'd be amazed what happens when people speak celebration over each other. So next little one, every time you have a birthday in your family or somebody with close friends, if you will actually take the time to go, we're going to celebrate you on your birthday, and then go, I'm going to tell you what I love most about you, what attributes or characteristics, and everyone's going to pour on. We do that a lot. And, you know, Megan, Remember I said my little creative pioneer, who's not naturally the most relational, did it for one of her friends in a pizza. And in England, we never do that sort of thing. She said, "Of the they're all 14-year-old girls at the time." And Megan said half of them cried because they'd never had anybody do that over them. So that's something simple where you go, you could define it every dinner table, every time you go out and go, okay, what's the word? What's the encouragement that goes? So there's lots of practical in the Gears book. There's all kinds of ways that you can actually go, how do we begin to create environments where those things happen in an intentional way? But Chrissy, I could go on for days like this, so forgive me, I suspect.
No, you're good. Well, I'm going to transition as we're talking about words. And one of my favorite things about doing this is encouraging our guests. And so one of the things that I love to do is just to remind each guest that comes on that no matter what they do, no matter how many books they write, no matter how many people they influence, that who they are, if that all that was stripped away from them, they would be worthy and valuable, and people would say the same things about them, whether they're highly successful. So I want to read some things that some friends and coworkers have said over you and who you are. And just the power. I didn't even know we were really going to talk about the power of words, but this just transitioned. So if you'll just kind of listen over these, this is what people, when I ask, can you give me some words about Steve? This is what they said. You rarely find people with the blend of intelligence, wit, and fun that you find with Steve. He is truly a mastermind in helping people identify who they are called to be, and who they can be. Steve is a liberator in every circle of influence and will stop at nothing to fight for others' highest possible good. Here's another one. Steve is the kind of guy who can dig out the very best in others. He is the expert on personality differences and has given me the tools I need to see the beauty in each person's unique makeup. Steve can lead others to places they didn't even know they had the capacity to go. He has so much wisdom, and I have such respect for him. And then one more. Steve is amazing. He is a powerful gift to help people open their eyes to who they really are without condemnation or fear. He is a liberator who fights for the best in others and is a loyal and true friend to those he has helped for a lifetime.
Wow.
So
thank you.
You're welcome. So hope those just bring you life. And when you're kind of in a place, I'm going to email these to you too, but when they're in a place that you're like, oh my gosh, why do I even do what I do? I just want you to remember those things and just the power of words. So thanks so much for being on and for teaching us. And
pleasure.
I'll definitely put all this on the show notes because I think it is so important to have tools to know who we are, but also who our family is and the people around us. That's how we love others well, by knowing others well.
Thank you, Christy.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the time. Those words are powerful, so thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm experiencing what I said to do for others, so bless you.
Thanks for hanging out with our family today. We hope it inspired you and gave you ideas of how to live out love exactly where you are. We wish we could just hug each and every one of you and let you know what a difference you can make in this world. We would be so honored if you subscribed to our podcast, left a review if it inspired you, or shared with a friend, because we know word of mouth is actually what matters. And don't forget to share your stories at Be Strong Story on our social media of how you lived out the message of
be strong, protect the weak, love everyone.
Because we believe with our whole hearts that every person can make a difference and inspire another. See you next week.